This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three Man Front.
Mildly surprised that there's no room for a non-conference opponent anywhere in the schedule. However, I think with what Greg Sankey's been saying about control, about optics, about safety, and about flexibility, this is your best way to do it. Let's be honest. The best way to assure that you can control your entity and what games are going to be played, and if you're allowed to move games and reschedule games, is for them just to be your own teams. And so for Greg Sankey to do that, he decided to go out and play a 10-game SEC schedule. Am I going to sit here and tell you that I don't think what the ACC did had anything to do with it? Yeah, I'm sure it was a matter of discussion at the SEC office in downtown Birmingham, but I don't think that that was a major factor in why they decided to do this. To me, this is about getting quality games, a certain number of games, being able to play an SEC championship game potentially, and then having the flexibility to be able to move things around with that ability to be able to control things. And when you bump things back to September the 26th, I think you're able to see what's going to happen when students come back to campus. You're able to get a better look at what happens with the NFL and a longer duration of what happened in some other professional sports leagues. So there are a lot of reasons as to why Greg Sankey would do this, in my opinion. You can point to a few things that you don't like about it, and I get it, and I understand it. But to me, this is Greg Sankey looking at the betterment of 14 teams as opposed to the betterment of four teams, Pat.
No, you're absolutely right. The one thing that I do like is that the divisions will stay intact. There's going to be some open weeks, like a three-week period. It's not going to be the same for everybody. And then, of course, everybody will have that off week before a proposed SEC championship game. I love the fact that the SEC, a bold move, and they pretty much told the ACC, you know what? Sorry, guys, you thought you had us checkmate on the chessboard from the day before. And the SEC says, what's more important to us is our conference, and our teams and games within our conference is more important than those cross-conference rivalries. So we're going to get that 10 games, and I would anticipate, guys, that we could see a schedule relatively soon, something that they weren't ready to release yesterday, but I know they've been working on it ever since.
Well, we thought we had a good idea of what the schedule would look like. All indications and sources saying that you go to, you know, your next two cross-divisional opponents. And we started playing that out. That would mean Alabama would get Vandy and travel to the Swamp to play Florida. And then later on, we get word that that might not be the case, that strength of schedule might be coming into play with some of these teams that already have a Georgia, let's say, for Alabama, and a Tennessee on the other side in the East. You don't add a Florida, maybe in addition to Vanderbilt. I don't know, with strength of schedule, how you determine that if you're the SEC office. We're talking about FPI yesterday. How do you do that, Cole? How do you sit there and rank prior to the season? I mean, you have a good idea who's expected to be there, but how do you find that other opponent? And let's just be honest, guys. Somebody is going to, quote, think that they got screwed in all of this.
No, you're going to have people who are upset. You're going to have people who are happy, people who think that they made out in a good way. But let's be real here. This is going to be a 10-game SEC schedule, okay? It's not going to be easy for anybody. Buckle your junk. This is going to be a difficult road, a difficult task for every team involved. So, yes, you may add an A-plus opponent, but are you adding two A-plus opponents? No, nobody is, or nobody will. So I don't – fair is going to be a term that's thrown around with this a lot. I don't know if there's really a fair way to do it, but if you take something that already exists and you just apply it that way, I think that might be the only right way to do it. I think we get this schedule next week. I think the SEC has a pretty good idea of what it is and what they want it to be. And I bet that are going to be on your schedule. Therefore, that's who you're going to play. Some aren't going to like it. Some may think they're cool with it. But the reality is, it's still going to be 10 SEC games for everybody, and that's not going to be easy.
You know, and I understand that this year, everybody, you've just got to go play. Like you said, strap up the chin strap. Let's go play football. Here's the schedule. Let's do it.
Buckle your junk is what he said.
Exactly. But let's take a look. Let's just say if Alabama has to play Vanderbilt in Florida, based on next year's non-division opponents, do they change the future of those opponents, Cole, in your opinion? Or would Alabama still play Florida next year, but maybe that game would be in Bryant-Denny as opposed to the Swamp?
I would have to think you at least change the home and home. Yeah, and you at least alter it from that perspective, which brings up a really, really interesting point to what has happened now with the ACC and the SEC. And when you look at the fact that South Carolina was scheduled to play at Clemson this year, is Clemson just going to be cool with them going to Columbia, South Carolina next year? Why would Clemson not sit back and say, whoa, hold on. No, that'd be two in a row in Columbia, man. We're not doing it. Sorry, not happening. You know, same thing for Georgia Tech and Georgia. You know, why would those two teams sit back and one or the other not be frustrated with how that was going to play out? I mean, is Georgia going to go to Atlanta next year and say, no, that's two consecutive games in this series in Atlanta. We're not doing it. It's not going to happen. You got some potential for some real problems there. Some real problems with those schools if they begin to sort of fight that and they begin to sit back and say, we're not doing it. You know, why would Florida State go to Gainesville next year? Say, we were at Gainesville the last time, man. You owe us a trip.
Yeah.
You should come here. And that could really become a major point of contention for some big time programs.
Major League Baseball headlines. They reduced doubleheaders to seven innings. And the Cardinals are going to be part of the history because of COVID-19. Two players have tested positive. They're going to make up that game on Sunday playing the seven-inning doubleheader.
They will do that in Milwaukee. And also the Miami Marlins will be a part of history, too. They're scheduled to play a doubleheader as well.
Also, a memo detailing new Major League Baseball rules.
Actually, Landrum, as much as I know you want to keep going into baseball, I know you love that. There's something that's I know Cole would love to, and there's a lot more big
Cole
news
love?
That we need
talk,
to.
We're talking offensive linemen and the new splash shields?
No, there's something that there's some big news that we actually need to discuss, especially ahead of this weekend.
We got new Jordans.
Stanley Cup qualifying rounds begin tomorrow. Man. August 11th, the first round of the playoffs start. Top four teams in each conference will play a round robin seeding round for playoff seeding, while teams 5 through 12 in the standings will play a best of five play-in round. All subsequent rounds will be best of seven. It all gets going tomorrow, 11 a.m. NBC Sports Network, if you can luckily find that somewhere on your dial. New York at Carolina. I think that's Rangers at Hurricanes. Chicago at Edmonton, 2 o'clock on NBC. Florida at New York, the other New York, 3 o'clock on NBC Sports Network. Montreal is at Pittsburgh. I know that one's the Penguins. 7 p.m. on Big Boy NBC. And the Winnipeg team takes on the Calgary team.
The Blue Bombers?
At 9:30 p.m. on NBC Sports Network. March Madness of hockey is here. Finally, it has come. We get to soak it all in and enjoy it. That's right. Get ready for a dynamic bracket with the highest remaining seed facing the lowest remaining seed in each round.
Cole, you sound so excited. You need
to head
to the washroom and check your gitch.
NHL's back tomorrow.
Where did your fondness for hockey? Is that your Pittsburgh roots? Is that your Croatia? Where did all that originate?
With hockey.
You love it apparently.
Yeah. So it's
who do you like? Who's the favorite here to win the cup? Lord Stanley's.
Well, I'm going to go Penguins just right off the jump.
Of course he is. I'm going for the defending NHL champions.
I'm going to go Pittsburgh Penguins because I believe they Sidney Crosby. So,
and who are those champs, Pat?
That would be the St. Louis Blues.
Okay.
Okay. So tune in tomorrow. We get the start of the NHL. And how many weeks are we going with the NHL? No, we do
that. The NHL Stanley Cup Final will run September 22nd through October 4th.
October 4th.
Probably on NBC Sports Network.
At least they're consistent.
So get your hockey sweaters out, sharpen those blades. It's time to play hockey.
Get ready for that.
Oh, yeah.
That's tough. I mean, you think about Stanley Cup Final going up against week one of SEC football. Good luck with that one.
Yeah, this Red Deeks going to be great, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is What the Puck. Thank you, Thank you, Cole, for keeping us updated. I totally forgot that we were even getting hockey.
30-player max rosters, but they're allowed to carry as many goalies as they wish. Why would you not have 52 goalies?
Like, yeah, just
hell of it. Yeah. Voluntary goalies. Hey, you want to come in here? We're not going to pay you, but you can just, you know, just in case.
They won't be borrowing the Zamboni driver that they got from one of those teams last year.
There may be somebody affiliated with the SEC that was rolling around the day with sort of an individual playlist, a playlist of one song. Josh Kendall is going to join the show at 11 a.m. this morning, and he tweeted out yesterday that South Carolina Board of Trustees member Chuck Allen told him that the SEC vote was 13-1. Quote, "My understanding is the vote was 13-1 with our president, Bob Castlin, being the sole dissenting vote, and part of the reason for his dissenting vote was the rivalry with Clemson." So I imagine not only Chuck, that board of trustee member, but also President Castlin rolling around in whatever their vehicle is today listening to this. Have we seen a bigger CYA move in the last 5 or 10 years of college football than a president and a board of trustee member, along with the head coach and the AD, who have since made commentary about the fact that, hey guys, in this state, it ain't my fault that we're not going to play Clemson this year?
Look. Is it really that bad of a move? It's a nice political move, in my opinion. If I'm the president,
yeah. If you knew how the vote was,
yeah, you knew how the vote was going to go, and go, hey guys, I know we're coming back from lunch,
yeah,
but I got to live here, and I know how you guys are going to vote. Don't hate on me. I just need them to know that I voted to keep that game with Clemson. That
doesn't surprise me at all. Castlewood released a statement yesterday that said, "I'm pleased that football will return in the fall and that we will play our SEC competitors. Throughout discussions, I took the position that we should continue to play our in-state rival, but I support the ultimate decision." Again, saying, hey guys, I'm good with what we're doing, but...
You think Greg McGarrity, you think he really cared?
It doesn't appear as though, no.
Scott Strickland, I mean, he might say, yeah.
Not as much.
No, not as much. No, not a big deal. We don't have to play Florida State.
But that does bring us to an interesting question moving forward of those ACC schools, who do they go and play now? Now, Florida's got a lot to choose from, and they probably have the least difficult decision. I feel comfortable telling you guys that Louisville and Western Kentucky will play. I think that's one that just happens. But who's Clemson playing? Citadel?
You got Wofford. They played them before. Throw in Wofford. The Terriers.
Massive. Good thing they saved that weekend for that one.
Well, you got James,
that's a good lettuce game.
You got James Madison that could fill the bid for Virginia Tech and Virginia.
Yeah.
I mean, is Syracuse playing Buffalo?
It's not a bad idea. Get Buffalo. Kind of limited up there in New York as far as who you can
play.
Georgia
Tech's got a ton of options.
Oh, they got a ton of options.
That's not going to be a problem for them. But, I mean, you begin to sort of look down and you think to yourself, who are they going to play? It felt like a great idea at the time. But now you've limited things to where, you know, if you're going to play an away game, it's got to be in your state. And then who are you even going to be able to get to come play you? I think what it will do is, remember we discussed where that week would fall for ACC teams? I think maybe you try to allow them different spots on the calendar to be able to fit that non-conference game in now, as opposed to saying, yes, it's going to be that last weekend of the regular season.
All right, and I gave credit to Ross Dellinger. I was just thinking the last couple of days. Cole told us actually a week and a half ago that the 10-game schedule was what they were strongly considering. when it came to the SEC. And then he threw in a couple of different scenarios, and I know Brandon Marcello chimed in as well, Pat. But, you know, Cole did tell us, look for the 10-game schedule. It's getting a lot of momentum with the athletic directors.
Yes, I mean, that was Cole's been consistent on that from day one in regards to what this potentially could look like. And you know, Cole, you pointed out this morning on one of your tweets, and it's really sad when you look at some of these rivalry game streaks that are going to be coming to an end, whether it's South Carolina Clemson that's played 111 straight years, Georgia Tech, Georgia for 95 years. That's just to name a few. We talked yesterday about Notre Dame and Navy possibly being out the window. So there are some casualties to this situation in regards to the schedules and some of the history with college football.
Well, and you think about new history that could have been made. Penn State, Virginia Tech, they've never played. Mm-hmm. And we were going to get that game this year. Florida State, 62 consecutive years those teams have played. And even some of the newer rivalries that have sort of come into the league, Kentucky, Louisville, 26 consecutive years. And we still don't know what's going to happen with Notre Dame, Navy. 93 consecutive years those teams have played. It's pretty crazy to think about it. And I mean, you look at Notre Dame USC, which is one that we're not going to get. Since 1926, that rivalry has only taken 3 years off. And those were all for World War II.
Wow.
Since 1926, think about that. Stanford, Notre Dame have played the last 32 years. That's not going to take place this year. So, yeah, it's going to be a historic season for a lot of reasons. Some good, some bad, some indifferent. But different is going to be the key word, no matter how we try to describe it.
All right, we know that because of what's happened with all of these schools, their budgets have all been affected, right?
Mm-hmm.
And financially for the SEC, you're trying to come up with different ways at some schools to make up some of that shortfall. And whether that be from not having the NCAA basketball tournament, your spring sports, and what it could mean, you can look at it from that angle and say some of these payouts that we were going to pay for some of these games, it's actually going to save us. We had already accounted that in the budget. Now, for certain teams like Auburn, if you were going to go play in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game with North Carolina, you were going to get $5 million. Well, you're not going to get that $5 million now, but maybe you're not going to have to pay a few million dollars
sure.
to play a game. You can look at it that way.
It's offsets.
But for the group of five schools, they count on that revenue. Mm-hmm. What are some of the payouts that were expected to be paid if those games had been played?
Yeah, I mean, just think about this. Before the SEC canceled their non-conference schedule yesterday, the 14 teams in the SEC, they had guaranteed games with G5 schools totaling $31.8 million. If you add the FCS programs that were on the SEC schedule, it was going to be $38 million combined. Bama was supposed to pay Georgia State $1.3 million. Kent State was going to make $1.7 million. And Tennessee Martin was going to make $500,000. The Kent State payout, guys, talking about the MAC conference, this is where you start feeling bad for programs. The payout was going to represent 25% of its total football revenue and 9% of its total athletic budget.
Yikes.
Think about that. 9% of their whole athletic budget was based on them coming to Tuscaloosa and taking a butt whooping to Alabama. Auburn was set to pay Alcorn State $475,000, and additional $1.9 million was to go to UMass, and $1.85 million was supposed to go to Southern Miss. Now, of course, thanks to the Act of God clause that many people have in these contracts, Auburn should be off the hook. They won't have to pay any of those. But as you mentioned, they were going to get $5 million playing North Carolina in Atlanta. Meanwhile, back on the Alabama schedule, I forgot to mention, they were set to make $6 million against USC in Dallas. So that's off the table. One other school I wanted to point out, I was reading what Missouri was having to pay. And I'm sure they're going to be covered by some of these Act of God clauses. But the BYU and Eastern Michigan games each carried a $1 million cancellation cost. Central Arkansas's cost was set at $900,000, and Louisiana's was at $1.3 million. I mean, that's hefty enough, especially for an athletic department like Missouri that's been operating guys in the red for at least the last three fiscal years. Central Arkansas was also on Missouri's schedule, but Missouri agreed to the amendment of their contract in June, noting that if weather conditions, labor strikes, wars, act of God, the pandemic, public health crisis, government restrictions, orders, that they would not be held liable. So it looks like they're going to be good there. So that was just some examples of what kind of money you're talking about. Most people around the Southeastern Conference, Cole, they believe that they will not be held to these contracts because these guys also know that they're going to need these SEC schools in the future for future schedules.
So now this becomes the question when it comes to the NCAA Board of Governors. The Power Five conferences have made their decision. No official word yet from the Big 12, but we know what the other four are going to do. You got a vote coming up and trying to get some clarification on what that vote could mean. If you remember, they were supposed to vote last week, but one of the members, and I believe it was the West Virginia athletic director, he actually proposed that they delay it, table the fall championships discussion until later so we could get some more conferences to see what they were going to do. So, Cole, Pat asked the question to you. What if the Board of Governors comes out and they say there's not going to be any NCAA championships for any fall sports? That certainly affects the FCS, but subsequently, what would that mean for the FBS, Power Five, Group of Five, whoever?
I don't think it immediately shuts it down. I really don't. And I think that if the presidents were going to allow that to make their decision to potentially not play, then I don't know why you even come out and make this decision yesterday. Or why the Big Ten makes a decision that they do, or the Pac-12 makes a decision that they do. You just go ahead and say, well, hey, why would we make any decision until this vote takes place? And why would we try to put together any sort of a schedule? Why would we try to make any sort of a decision until the NCAA Board of Directors meeting? There would be no reason to do it if that could shut you down. So I think it's going to make them think, and I think, like Commissioner Sankey has often referenced, the optics may not be great, but I do not believe that immediately says, hey, there's not going to be any football as far as the FBS is concerned. I think it makes it possible that you move it, but I don't think that it just comes down with a sledgehammer and says, yes, immediately football's over.
And the question would be, I agree with that. I think the Power Five probably would not waver, but the Group of Five, do they have the intestinal fortitude?
I think they do because they have budgets, athletic budgets that have to be met. And I can see them by making a decision not to play, what it would mean down the road. You're further separating yourself. For those who are proponents of the Power Five breaking away from the Group of Five, you're only going to add that fuel to that fire. And the Power Five, if there is a statement you can make and there is any decisions that we've seen in the past where the NCAA lately, they've kind of laid off and kind of separated themselves and said, hey, boys, remember at the beginning of this, we're not going to make those decisions. We're going to let the individual conferences make those decisions and what's best for them. That might have told us all we need to know. Now, there's people concerned that the vote could come down for the Board of Governors, that there's not going to be a championship, Pat. But if that was any indication, then if I'm the Power Five, I'm like, Cole, I'm not letting that, you know, ruin my season. If the SEC was the only conference to play, the optics were bad, but we know what it would mean financially.
Oh, no, there's no question. The only thing I'll disagree with what you just said in regards to the non-Power Five, the Group of Five, is the fact that, you know, where are they going to get that money? Because a lot of those schools depended on, you know, teams from the MAC depended on the Big Ten, or they depended on coming down here and playing Alabama like Kent State. I mean, where are they going to get that money now? That money's gone. So, you know, there is the pressure to try to have a season, but even when you play in Miami, Ohio, to play a football game in the MAC, you're still not going to have enough people because Cole's done enough games in that conference before for ESPN. It's a tough sled to get people there in the building anyway.
Cole?
There's no doubt. I mean, MAC attendance is not great, and that's they don't play those games on Tuesday and Wednesday nights for attendance.
Nope.
They play those games on Tuesday and Wednesday nights for the television revenue. So, I mean, I think when you bring up the Group of Five, Landrum, I think right now, based on some G5 administrators that I've spoken to in the last 24 hours, because I'm very interested to know what's your mindset? What are you doing? What are you thinking? I think their plan is to play in the fall. And I believe, personally, that week zero, week one, week two, week three, there are going to be some massive television windows that are going to be open. And I don't know how much more revenue necessarily that you could go generate, but good Lord, could you get some great exposure for your teams and for your conference. And that might equate to some better revenue down the road. So that's a huge opportunity. There are going to be some opportunities that arise out of this whole thing. We've seen it already with the UFC. We saw it with the PGA. There will be opportunities for certain schools, certain leagues, to be able to take advantage of certain days, times, windows, which I think is another intriguing conversation as to when games will actually be played this fall. But I think week zero, week one, week two, maybe even some of week three, you might see some MAC, some Conference USA. Mountain West is going to be tough because I don't know who else they can go play. And I think they're impacted by this a little bit more than some of those other leagues are. Sun Belt teams, being able to find some TV slots for some games to be able to go out there and play. And I think you could find a way for that to be able to help you out. But as far as fans in the stands, for those leagues, those teams, I don't think that that's going to be – I don't think that's something that's on the forefront of their minds. I think it's finding some non-conference games to still try to get a paycheck and then finding ways to maybe take advantage of some windows and get your games in front of a large audience.
And you mentioned Conference USA. I was really happy to see this. Brett McMurphy reported yesterday at the stadium that Conference USA will keep its 8-game league schedule and allow schools to play as many non-conference games as they want. Also, there's a possibility, guys, that CUSA teams could fill their non-conference portion of their schedule, i.e. UAB not playing Miami.
Right.
They could schedule another CUSA opponent as a non-conference game.
The NBA was back last night. Pat, I know that you were glued to the television watching the restart of the NBA there in the bubble. We wondered what the optics would look like, the style of play, the broadcasts, your review of what it looked like night one with the two games.
Well, to me, I thought it looked really good. But as I was watching the game, it struck me like this, like to me, it looks familiar. It reminded me of something. And it finally hit me. It reminded me of the NCAA basketball tournament when you have two really good teams playing, but they're playing out like in Boise, Idaho, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very important game. You've got two very talented teams, but there's just really no energy, you know, around the court.
Right.
You know, because like usually when you would go out west before the NCAA made these generic basketball floors, you know, you would either go to the Huntsman Center in Salt Lake City and it would be, you know, it would sit a little differently.
Yeah.
You know, the court would look different. You go to Boise and the camera angle would be way too high up in the rafters, you know, that kind of thing.
And they had that that orange and blue, like, in the paint.
Yes.
Like, weird, nasty court design.
Yes, exactly. And so, again, it was two really good teams, but they're playing in the NCAA tournament. But you just did not feel, because the building, because this was a first or second round game I'm talking about. I'm not talking about a Sweet 16 game. And that's what it kind of reminded me of last night. Again, good basketball. I know there was a lot of turnovers, but I'm just saying it was good to see them back on the floor. And I thought the television production value, the quality was outstanding. So I walked away thinking, you know what? This is solid. You know, this is really good. Good return.
Well, Colin, I know that you haven't been huge on the pumping and the crowd noise, but after watching some of the exhibitions down there and just hearing the squeaking of the sneakers, I thought that if there's any sport that needed it, this one did, and I was interested to see the broadcast, but they were constantly piping in that noise. You still had the music. Kevin Harlan, he's always great on the call. I think they made it as good as you can make it as far as aesthetically and watching it.
Well, I thought the best part was in the backdrop, the digital fans were allowed to sort of be in the stands, and you had like one guy next to one girl and his head size was four sizes bigger than hers. And then like digitally, the next guy over had, you know, another gigantic head. And then you had a small head. It's weird to see, but I mean, cool that they actually allow people to be able to get in and do that. Listen, the quality of basketball wasn't great. I'm not going to act like it was. And the fact that Zion sat the final 7.5 minutes of that game last night, where New Orleans was in a great chance to be able to win that game, a game that they needed, by the way, was a little bit disappointing. But you got to see LeBron come on strong late. Anthony Davis was great for the entirety of that game last night. Lakers get a big win to sort of begin to separate there for the number one seed in the West. So It was fun to watch. It was great. I wanted to see more Zion, and obviously they were going to limit his minutes, which I feel like is a little bit weird because he's had plenty of time to get ready, and you're not going to have a ton of games. I mean, we don't think New Orleans is going to the finals, so why not get him in and let him go, cut him loose? I mean, after those injuries at Duke, yeah, they cut him loose there. They didn't play him. You know, Coach K didn't play him 10 or 15 minutes in those games, so I just thought that was a little bit weird last night, but it was fun to watch. It was competitive. It was good. Rudy Gobert actually, you know, helping the Jazz win late, being the fact that he's sort of catches the blame for a lot of people with this whole shutdown actually taking place in the first place. So, I mean, it was pretty cool to be able to watch competitive basketball. I was tuned into a lot of it. I'd be lying if I said I stayed up for the entirety of the Lakers-Clippers game. I did fall asleep, but I tried. So.
All right, so we got the NBA that's resuming tonight. You'll get a lot more action tonight as the NBA restarts.
So today opening day or was yesterday?
I don't have an NBA team, so flip a coin, man. Whatever day you want it to be.
So tonight is opening tip, right? Not last night?
Sure. That's okay. Great. I was like Cole. I could not stay up to watch the entirety. Let's go to Danny. He's in Oxford. Danny, welcome into 3-Man Front.
Hey, guys. First comment is I hope that this is not the new norm, because Alabama has some great home-and-home series over the next 10 or 12 years that I would hate to lose. So we hope things get back to normal soon. But my question mainly is for Cole, who played in the SEC. You know, during a season, you've got those weaker non-conference opponents that you can, you know, you don't talk about it, but everybody can get a little bit of rest and play a lot of people. How important is depth going to play in the last half of this season, knowing that it's an SEC game every week? And with the teams with, you know, 3 and 4 stars off the bench, i.e. Alabama, coming in to spell some of those guys, will that make a big difference in those last 3 or 4 games, Cole?
I was having a conversation with a friend of mine this morning, and I said I think I may have shifted my mindset to from leadership to depth as being the most important thing that will get these teams through this season. And when you're talking about who may end up being division conference champion, I think depth is going to be critical, especially O-line, D-line, because of the lack of physicality that these players have seen with no spring ball, and we don't really know exactly what this fall camp is going to look like. And then on top of that, you're playing a 10-game SEC schedule, which basically means no off weeks, no weeks that you're talking about where, oh, a guy's got a tweaked knee or a guy's got a high ankle sprain, we can sit him out. He doesn't have to play against the Citadel. He doesn't have to play against Tennessee Chattanooga. You know, we'll give him a little bit of a rest this week, or maybe he goes a series or two and then he's out. You get some of the younger guys a little bit more experience. So the impact will be felt into next season, because what games do you roll in your threes or your fours or your guys that don't get meaningful snaps in a competitive game? They're going to get as many reps this year. They're not going to be able to play as much. So I think depth becomes hypercritical for this particular season, and the teams who are deeper in the trenches, I think, are going to have a massive advantage going into this football season, especially in the SEC when you're talking about playing 10 conference games.
Yeah, we had Rod Payne on yesterday. That was really the premise of my question, is what Danny, and we appreciate the call, Danny in Oxford, what he just asked you, Cole, was, I said, would you prefer to have the 12-game schedule where you do have some of those lettuce games, if you will, that are mixed in, or a 10-game conference schedule? He said 10-game conference schedule, but he was coming from a competitive standpoint, which I totally believe. I was coming from a just wear and tear on your body and what that's going to be playing, you know, week in, week out. And I know we're going to have some bye weeks, but trying to recover. I mean, you know, and some of these games, I know it's always tough. Like, people will make up like, oh, well, anytime you got to go play Mississippi State and you got to go turn around, you know, you're just going to physically be beat up. Cole, you know as well as anybody, any SEC team that you play, you're going to be beat up. There's a pounding. There's going to be a difference in playing. Some of the FCS schools are going to be on that schedule. So that will be interesting. As far as depth, Pat, when we get to this 10-game schedule and you start rolling through it, especially with everything else that's going on.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And not to mention the fact that, I want to go back to something that Cole's talking about earlier about practicing. I know for a fact that a lot of these schools around the SEC, especially in Tuscaloosa, I mean, they're ready to do something different. I mean, you know, they were just itching. I mean, you have a player yesterday that reportedly has gone down with a small knee injury. And so, you know, these guys are going all out in these workouts as opposed to like being on the field doing stuff. So I think, Cole, they're just itching. You know, they're ready to hit somebody else, or actually physically hit somebody, instead of dealing with trash cans on the field.
No, there's no doubt. And this is the time of the year when you want to get back to doing that. And keep in mind, you didn't do it in the spring. So you're probably tired of running around cones. You're probably tired of the conditioning. You're tired of 7-on-7. And you know that this is the time of year that you're getting ready to get back on the practice field. And you're actually going to get to go hit somebody. And then you do that for 3 or 4 weeks. And then you're tired of hitting on your teammates. And you're ready to go play a game. Because you're tired of practicing in pads against the same guys each and every day. But depth is going to be monumental in this season. And you go down and you look at the teams in this league that have the best depth. I think we could kick it around at different positions. Obviously, Alabama, Georgia, Florida are going to be at the top of that list. I think LSU's is actually better than people imagine. And it's weird, too, because I think now we don't know exactly what these schedules are going to look like, but how will this change our perception of different teams?
I agree.
Because of what we just said about depth, but take Texas A&M. I don't know if I'm going to look at Texas A&M as the number two team in the West anymore, because they're not going to benefit from the schedule that they were benefiting so greatly from before this. I mean, yesterday, I thought really highly of A&M. I still think they could be a pretty good football team, but I don't know if I would lock them in as the number two team in the West right now. I need to see what the schedule looks like.
Yeah, but we knew Auburn had a really, really good defense coming back last year, and there were some question marks on the offensive line, but what did we always preface all of that with? But that schedule is brutal. That schedule is brutal. So some of these teams, yeah, if the conference schedule does come out, and like Cole said, Texas A&M, you've got Florida now. That's certainly going to change things. Hey, Florida, instead of playing the two games we had circled for you, and you can throw in Tennessee as well, but Georgia and LSU, now you're going to play Alabama, and you're going to play Texas A&M. I don't know if I'm going to pick them to win the East. I think I might like Georgia more now.
Three-man front. Weekdays 10 till 2 on Jocks 94.5, JocksFM.com, and the Jocks mobile app.